Coming up on today's episode, we got a jam-packed Miami sports pod for you here today. I have a special guest joining me, good friend of mine, Kevin. He does phenomenal work for the Miami Marlins. Baseball is back this week, opening day today, and Marlins opening day tomorrow. So we got a lot of baseball talk to get to today. You guys are definitely going to enjoy that. He's a big Miami sports fan, just like myself and a lot of you guys listening to this podcast. So I get his thoughts on Tyreek Hill. We talk some Dolphins in there in the beginning. Shift things on over to the Miami Heat as the Heat are pretty much about to go into the playoffs as the first seed in the Eastern Conference. How about that? 52-28 record, 5 wins in a row. Everybody was panicking about Jimmy Butler and the Udonis Haslam fight and Spoelstra. Oh my God. And look what the Heat just did. 5 wins in a row. And everyone has forgot about that just like that. So the Heat are rolling. Last week of the season is this right now. Sunday, NBA season's over. Playoffs, ready to go. We got some fun Heat talk to talk about. And then we wrap things up with his bread and butter, talking some Miami Marlins as opening day, like I said, is today. Marlins opening day tomorrow. So a lot to talk about on this podcast. I think you're going to enjoy it. It was a phenomenal interview. And we got all that coming up on the Miami Sports Vibes podcast. All right, everyone, welcome to the Miami Sports Vibes podcast. We got a special episode for you guys here today. I'm joined by a great guest, great friend of mine, Kevin Barral. He's the Miami Marlins beat writer and reporter for Fish Stripes. He also has his own show, KO Sports Corner, on YouTube. That's his YouTube channel. Please check him out on my tweets and the description of this podcast. I'm going to tell you guys where you can find him, and please subscribe to his channel. He's also the co-host of Fish Stripes Unfiltered. We're going to talk all Miami sports with this man right here, Dolphins, Heat, and Marlins since they open up this week. But Kevin, thanks for joining the show, and how you doing today, my man?
Man, I'm excited. I'm doing great. I mean, the Marlins just made a trade. The Heat are in first place. The Dolphins look like they're going to really go for it this year, and I'm very excited to talk about all of it on one podcast, man.
Yeah, man, I'm freaking excited, man, for all our three major Miami sports teams here. It's great because, honestly, you know, we've been through a lot of stuff, man. We're being Dolphins fans up and down, being Marlins fans, we got a lot of ups and down. The Heat, for the most part, been always solid. Relevant. Yeah. Yeah, been solid, to say the least. And it's like every time you kind of say, like, damn it, you know, I'm done with this team or I give up, they just rail us back in by making a couple big-time moves in the offseason, and here we are yet again. And that's starting with the Dolphins, man. And the Dolphins just recently made a big splash. I've talked about this on the podcast. Adding a guy like Tyreek Hill, man, everybody knows how I feel about this guy, how I feel about the addition, but I want to hear your thoughts, man. What are your thoughts on Tyreek Hill coming to the Miami Dolphins?
You could just describe it in one word, which is wow. Like, you would have never imagined when that first report came out saying that they're going to trade him, you know, we're getting rid of Tyreek Hill. You would have never thought Miami's going to be on this guy. You know, they're going to get Tyreek Hill. And when you see Dolphins and Jets, you're like, holy shit, Miami may actually get this guy. And then when you get the breaking news, you start going apeshit, man. It's like, you got one of the best receivers in the NFL. You're pairing him up with Jalen Waddle. Tua now has a great target. Tyreek Hill is arguably a top 5 wide receiver in the NFL. And you gave him a massive contract extension, which is going to guarantee him to be here in Miami for, I think, 4 years. The contract was.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And this is a perfect trade for Miami, man. Tyreek Hill is going to pair up with Jalen Waddle. Tua now gets Terrell Marnstead as well, which I assume we'll get into. This is perfect. You have everything set in place for this guy to succeed. Now it's just, let's make it happen. And this is a better wide receiver room than one we had last season in 2021. So Miami definitely improved on that end, and they made a lot more moves that I assure you, I assume we'll talk about as well.
No, yeah, for sure, man. And honestly, you know, adding a guy like Hill and then having a guy like Waddle right there, obviously we've seen the connection that Waddle and Tua built. This is like the same type of player, but even better, obviously. So just imagine the impact that they're both going to have in the field at the same time. I know Tua is going to be so excited to get out there, and then the fan base, obviously, is going to be excited to watch them ball out for sure. But a lot of people, honestly, they were, you know, talking down on it, saying that we gave up too much draft picks, we gave up too much draft capital. And I said, you know what? You're getting a known commodity in Tyreek Hill. Like, you're getting a guy that is top three in the league, top five, like you said, even. That's known. He's made it to the Pro Bowl every single year. He has not shown any signs of slowing down whatsoever. The kid is like 26 years old. You're getting that, and this is no rental, man. You're getting him with a 4-year deal on top of that. So in that case, I'm trading all those picks. I mean, do you have any regrets about that? Do you think the Dolphins gave up too much? Because I certainly don't.
We give up one first round pick. Come on, man. Next season, we're gonna have two first rounders. We have another two. We have a three. We're looking good. And San Francisco, I do think, will regress a little bit with the new quarterback. They're going to have to get adjusted to it. Miami's going to get a nice pick, I assume, out of that. Maybe top 20 pick, top 15. I assume it's a good draft class next season. I haven't really looked into this one, but the next one, I know I think it's going to be a pretty good one. So Miami set themselves in a great spot, man. They gave up a fourth and a sixth as well. I don't think that's going to turn into anything special unless it's a Hall of Famer. Then you start to regret it. But Miami got Tyreek freaking Hill. This is a good trade for the Miami Dolphins. At this moment, that was what they needed. You got Cedric Wilson, you have Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and you still have Mike Gesicki, who could play the slot and plays the tight end. Miami really put themselves in a better position. They put themselves second in the AFC East and really, really fighting for that number one seed. I wouldn't be surprised if Miami at some point this season is the number one seed in the AFC East.
That would be awesome, man. If we could pull that off, I mean, I want to take baby steps because we still got to beat Buffalo, man. They have not shown me that they could beat Buffalo convincingly.
Yep.
So until then, I'm going to pump the brakes on it. But the potential's there, bro. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. The potential's there, adding all this talent on the offensive end. We know our defense is top-notch. We just had to get some weapons, get a running back, which we got two serviceable guys, Chase Edmonds and Raheem Mostert. I think they're very solid. They could provide a lot of different things, versatility to the run game. And then we needed help on the offensive line. And then what did we do? Not only did we get one of the best receivers in the NFL in Tyreek Hill, but then we get the best offensive tackle in free agency in Teron Armstead. What were your thoughts on that signing, man? Because I'm pretty sure you was damn excited about this one.
I loved it. I loved it as well. I love everything Miami's done. Now, starting with the running backs, Edmonds, I love the signing. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury after said that we got a good one, and I love it because that Cardinals running back room, if I'm correct, was a little bit crowded. So Edmonds is going to go now, and he's probably going to be the number one running back, I assume. It's going to be running back by committee mainly. They're going to split a lot of the runs, but you add Edmonds, that guy is going to help you a lot, and especially in the type of offense McDaniels is going to run, he works perfectly in there. Raheem Mostert, I think that was going to happen from the start of free agency. We got him for a steal as well. It was like 1 year, 1 million or 2 million, something like that.
Yep.
We got him for very cheap. And also keep in mind, he's coming off the ACL tear, if I'm correct. I mean, we have a good running back in Raheem Mostert. If you guys remember in 2019, when they got to the Super Bowl, he was probably one of the biggest pieces on that 49ers team. He made a name for himself that season. He was going to have a good 2020. He got injured. So, you know, and then you go on to Teron Armstead. The only downside of it is that he's a little bit injury prone. But besides that, you got the big fish of the free agent market. This was the best player available. You know, this guy walked into the Dolphins facility with a Dan Marino jersey. That's how hype he was to be a Dolphin. You loved it. And I'm pretty sure I saw the report. I don't know if you saw this as well, Nando, but Miami, the Dolphins Twitter was a big reason why he wanted to join the Dolphins. That was one of the big reasons. And I love to hear that, you know, that social media impacted his decision in terms of the positivity that, you know, you guys listening right now may have given him to join Miami. So I love that move. And then the final one, which I you know, we haven't touched, is Cedric Wilson. I didn't know too much because he wasn't known much in Dallas, but he was a big time piece. He'll be the number three wide receiver replacing Devontae Parker, who was dealt to New England. I don't know if you've spoken about that on the pod, but yeah, this is a great move for Miami. All these moves that they've made, they've put themselves in the playoff conversation once again. You know, at the end of 2021, a lot of questions, but you know, you added Connor Williams, who I just now remembered because they made so many moves. You added a fullback in there as well. So that fullback, keep it. I don't know the name off the top of my head, but I know he's pretty damn good because he had some nasty highlights with the Raiders. That fullback is going to be used big time for the Miami Dolphins because, you know, look at Kyle Juszczyk, how he was using the McDaniels offense or the Shanahan offense. He's going to be used similar to that, I assume.
Yeah, that's a good point right there. I didn't really focus on that much, but now that you mentioned it, you're right. He did use the the fullback on the 49er side quite a lot, and we saw how successful he became. And it's just, this show all just goes back to, like, you can see that Mike McDaniel, they talk about his offensive mindset and everything. You can really see that he's really creative when it gets to these things, and that's why I'm excited with all these moves. You know, adding a guy like Cedric Wilson, getting two speedy running backs that can also catch and run, having, you know, addressing the offensive line, getting more speed in the weapons. Like, you can tell that this guy is going to have a lot of fun with this team. It's like, he's basically playing Madden in real life, and I'm excited for it, honestly, because Mike McDaniel, you know, I talked about this with you on your podcast. In the beginning, I was kind of iffy about him. You know, obviously, he wasn't my type choice. I wanted Brian Daboll. I wanted Doug Peterson, and Mike McDaniel was kind of like third or fourth on my list. But to, in all fairness, I didn't know too much about the guy. But, you know, I was researching a lot, obviously, since we hired him. And then, obviously, hearing him smash all these interviews and all these podcasts, his personality is awesome. I'm just freaking excited, man. I think this guy, you know, is a good player's coach. I think players are going to love playing for him. And honestly, I mean, Tyreek Hill doesn't sign that extension if he doesn't like Mike McDaniel. And Teron Armstead doesn't sign with Miami if he doesn't like Mike McDaniel. So there goes to show you that this guy, I think he's going to hit it out the park. I think we got the right guy in Mike McDaniel. And hopefully we could just lead this team to the playoffs, because that's one thing that the Dolphins fans just desperately want. Playoffs, playoffs, playoffs. And I think we're in position for that, man. What do you think?
I love Mike McDaniel. When you first listen to all these players talking, the first statement that they give was why they joined Miami was Mike McDaniel. This guy's a player's coach. He's one of the smartest coaches in the NFL. I mean, that's what he was referred to as. And that Shanahan tree has been pretty successful. You look at the Rams coach, Zach Taylor, Zach Taylor's Bengals guy. I forgot the name right now, but damn, I suck. Sean McVay. There you go. Matt LaFleur. You have LaFleur on the Packers. It's a pretty good coaching tree. Now you add another one. So this is a perfect head coach for the Miami Dolphins. I did not want Mike McDaniels at the start. I hadn't heard too much about the guy. I was on your end. I wanted a Doug Peterson, a Brian Daboll. I was a big guy for Byron Leftwich. That's what I truly wanted. But Mike McDaniels, just little by little, the hype got up there. And I was very excited for this move when it happened. Young coach. Hopefully it works out for Miami and it works out for him, because this guy really deserves the chance. He's been in the NFL for a very long time. He began as the Denver Broncos ball boy to a head coach. That is a big jump. And, you know, I love this. He's brought in a good offensive staff, defense. He kept Josh Boyer, which some didn't agree with. I would have taken Vic Fangio if that was an opportunity. But as we know, he's going to be taking a break from coaching. I love the moves that they've made this offseason in the coaching staff and in on the team itself.
Absolutely. 100%. 100% agree with all your takes on that. And also, you know, we have, since we traded all these draft picks, you know, my mock drafts have been all over the place, honestly. It's hard to really get a sense of what exactly we're going into when it comes to this draft. You know, you had mentioned earlier some pretty solid players. I heard that next year's draft is actually a really, really good draft. And I heard that that's why the Dolphins are positioning themselves to have more picks in next year's draft, because it's more loaded. This year, it's apparently not as great as past years. So maybe that's why the Dolphins are a little bit okay getting rid of a couple picks here and there. But, you know, do you have anybody that you would like to see the Dolphins draft in particular, or are you just like me at this point, you know, moving on from that first and second round pick? I'm in the sense where we should just take the best player available. When you're picking late in the draft, you know you have a solid team on offense and defense. I'm a big believer in taking the best player available and trying to hit one out of the park with those. But do you have anybody in mind, or are you in the same realm?
I'm on the same boat, but I told you on my podcast that I like Kenneth Walker. This is the one guy, right? I've really looked into, this Michigan guy. I think he's going to go in the first round, early second. So probably not going to go, but if you could take some type of running back that Mike McDaniel could develop and turn into an absolute stud, because Raheem Mostert, you don't know if he's coming back next season. Now, that's too early to say that. And Chase, same thing with Chase Edmonds. You don't know what you're going to get from Gaskin. So having some security there in the running backs, it's perfect. I'm pretty much done with drafting O-line for Miami. It's not working out. You got, Michael Dieter. You have Austin Jackson, who's just been horrid. Lee Meichenberg, he's been okay. I'm not going to say he's been bad. I think they're going to fight for first spot this season on the offensive line, is what I've been hearing. So I do like what Miami has to offer, especially since you know, you look at Miami's past drafts, they've been pretty good. You got Tua, who's okay. He's been good at the moment. We'll probably get into that now soon. Jalen Waddle's been incredible. And then you've gotten a guy like the UM guy.
Shit. Jalen Phillips.
Damn, it's been a while since I've talked Dolphins. You could see it. But they've hit on a lot of guys in Javon Holland too. So you look at Miami and it's just draft heaven for them. It's been lately, you know, with the exception of Dieter and Austin Jackson, it's worked out well. So I'm happy. Yeah, Kenneth Walker's the guy. I know you've mentioned a couple running backs on your podcast. That's who I would go with. If you could get another receiver, maybe replace kind of what Parker Woods is doing for Miami, I wouldn't mind it as well.
Right. Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I trust Greer. When it comes to any other draft pick besides linemen, go with what you think, sure, man. You know, but last question on the Dolphins before we switch it over to some Heat talk here. Obviously, with all the additions and everything, it all falls in one guy's hands, and that is quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. What are your expectations this year for Tua? Do you think this will be the year that he breaks out? Do you believe in him? Like, give me your thoughts on Tua, everything.
All right, so let's go back to when they first got the guy. You know, this was a great pick for Miami. It was either going to be Herbert or Tua, and I was on the boat of, let's trade up and get Joe Burrow. They tried it. It didn't work. Then I was on the board of, let's get Tua. You know, at this point, why not? Let's take the shot. The guy looks healthy, looks ready to go. Let's get Tua. First season, he was actually promising. You know, it was promising. Came in through the middle of the season, finished 10-6. He got some wins for the Dolphins. They kind of had that closer mentality where Tua began the game, Fitzpatrick ended it. If you remember, that's what happened in the Las Vegas game, happened in the Denver game, which Fitzpatrick threw the pick, which at the end of the day, in my opinion, I think cost us our playoff chances. That was the game that really cost it for us. But you're going to see year two, Tua gets injured. Jacoby comes in. Oh, 1-7, something like that. He was really bad. Thank God he's gone. But we actually got a great backup in Teddy Bridgewater. But Tua has everything in place for him now. You know, last season you could have made the excuse he didn't have an offensive line. His receivers were out for a long time. Preston Williams wasn't in. Devontae Parker was in and out of the lineup. There's pretty much reliable targets were Gesicki and Waddle. You look at that, and that's not much. Now you have Tyreek Hill, Cedric Wilson, Gesicki, Jalen Waddle, Lynn Bowden, who's going to come back soon from injury. And I think he's taking that Debo role, which I really would love to see. I know we've agreed on that one, but for man, sure. Tua has it all in place. And you've got the offensive line, Connor Williams, Terrell Armstead. Hopefully Liam Eikenberg has a bounce back season. We'll see what type of center they bring in. I know JC Treader's still out there. I'd love to bring him in because he probably coming on either a vet min or a little bit more. Miami has the space to do that, and the defense didn't change, so you could still stay that defense is still going to be extremely reliable. Tua has it all in place. This is a make or break year. If it doesn't work for him, then you have to start looking to move on from the guy. I've always been a believer in Tua. You know this. I love the guy. I never wanted Deshaun Watson on the Miami Dolphins. Tua is the guy for Miami. He's the franchise quarterback, but he has to prove it this season because he has everything in place, and it all falls into his hands, as you said.
Absolutely. I'm a big Tua guy, as my listeners know. You know, that's who I wanted throughout the whole draft. I wanted him over Joe Burrow, you know, which is crazy now.
Now it's crazy, you know, yeah.
You see how great Joe Burrow is. Obviously, I would pick Burrow over Tua now. But, you know, back then I was all in on Tua. You know, I got the Tua jersey right away. I was excited. I had it right there. You know, my eyes got watery when we drafted the kid because I was just all in on Tua, man. Since watching him in Alabama, I was like, man, how amazing would this be? And when we drafted him, I was so excited. Definitely showed some promising plays throughout his rookie season. You can see the potential was there, and it just excited me for year two. And year two, I was just like, man, this kid is going to be a stud. You know, I was all in, like, Tua's our guy. And, you know, was it an okay season? Yeah. Was it a great season? To me, no. I think it was just a good average season. It could have been way better. You know, he honestly, I felt like he could have played a lot better. And I've been really critical of him on my podcast. And I know a lot of the Dolphins fan base is, you know, they babysit Tua. And they love Tua. They want him to succeed. And I want it too. But at the end of the day, I want to win. You know, so when it comes to wins and losses, that's where I judge somebody. And sometimes Tua had opportunities there where he really could have proved a lot of people wrong and proved the doubters wrong, shut the doubters up. And I think he failed to do so. There was a game against the Saints. Granted, we won. It was a primetime game. I don't think he played well at all. No. There was another game before that against the Jets. He didn't play well at all. I think he had two interceptions.
Was that was that the one in Miami or the one in
The one in Miami.
Because he played pretty, if I'm correct, he played pretty good at the one in New York itself.
Yes, he did. I was in attendance that game. He played really good. But I remember it was like this little, towards the end of the season, when playoffs became a possibility, where it was like, you know, we win three out of these last four, we're in, or we win four out of four, we're in, things of that sort. That's when I really, really judge a person. So I was really paying close attention. You got the easy game against the Jets. You know, we won that game, but why are you throwing two interceptions? And he, to me, he had a bad game.
If he would have won, same thing. If Tua would have won that Tennessee game, I think this conversation would be, all right, Tua made it happen. He got Miami to the playoffs, because we would have gotten in if we got that game against Tennessee. We would have been in because we probably would have beat the Patriots. This conversation would be a little bit different. It would still be as Tua the guy, but, you know, he made it happen. He got Miami to the playoffs for the first time since 2016 when Adam Gase took over for his first season with the Dolphins. So we also do have to keep that in mind, but you're right. Tua was not the greatest quarterback. You could even see he was kind of a time manager kind of this season, you know. The game that I really did like for Tua, and I will say, it was the one in ball against the Ravens, that Thursday night game. It was a defensive-heavy game, but when he was on offense, he really did help out the team because Jacoby Brissett got injured, and I really did like what B-Flo did on that game, bringing in Tua and keeping him there, not taking him out after a couple plays, and you saw Jacoby okay, because Jacoby Brissett was not working out, and it was very obvious that game. It was obvious from the after the Las Vegas game, because he played well in that game, as I will say. After that, it was just downhill.
I agree. He definitely came in and changed the whole energy of the team that game. That was definitely one of his better games. You know, you look at that game, you look at the Arizona game. But back to what I was saying before, those two games, the Saints and the Jets, rubbed me the wrong way. But you had that game, like you said, against Tennessee. And that was the game right there where all of my eyes were on Tua. I said, you know what? You had the game against the Saints, against the Jets. Okay, make up for it here. We need this win. We get this win, we're probably in the playoffs. So I was willing to forget about those two if you went in there and balled out. And then that was just such a disastrous game for him. And that's when I was really, really critical. But I'm not giving up on Tua. I think he has all the potential in the world. I think he's smart. His IQ is there. His accuracy is there. I think his arm is better than what a lot of people say. And he's a hard worker, man. And when you have a hard worker and a guy with high IQ, normally those type of players pan out. So, and then adding a guy like Tyreek Hill, you've seen the connection with Waddle and Gesicki already. This is year three. It's all on Tua. It's up to him. We get to the playoffs if Tua gets us into the playoffs. He has all the weapons. He has an offensive line. He has a running game. Has a new coach. Nobody that doesn't doubt that's doubting him here. There's no excuse for Tua. I believe in him until he proves me wrong. This year, though, this is it for me. Make or break.
And that's a great point. And that's a great point that you mentioned. Tyreek Hill's on the Dolphins. Yes. But he's not the one throwing the football. He's the one catching it. And if you want to have a good Tyreek Hill, Pro Bowler Tyreek Hill, Tua needs to make it happen. And this is something that's good, that Tua is very accurate. Every player that has stepped onto that podium, Tyreek Hill said he's accurate. Terrell Martin said he's accurate. So those are just some of the examples. And I think Chase Edmonds has said the same thing, as well as Mostert. So those are some things we have to keep in mind with Tua. And I think he's going to have a good season. Not a great season, but it's going to be good enough that I think Miami could make the playoffs, and you could finally say Tua was the quarterback for this team.
Yeah, I really hope he's the guy, because I mean, you can only root for a kid like that that's been through so much adversity throughout, so young in his career, when it comes to coaches, when it comes to injuries, when it comes to the media, you name it. So hopefully Tua is it. Hopefully Tua leads us to the playoffs, and we'll see how it goes, man. But I'm excited for this Dolphins season for sure. I know you are as well. But let's talk about our other boys in the basketball side of thing, and that's with the Miami Heat, man. I mean, right now sitting at 52-28, first place in the Eastern Conference, pretty much going to lock in that first seed. I believe Boston has to lose tonight. You know, by the time people are listening to this podcast, that will be over with.
But hopefully they lost.
Yeah, but the Miami Heat, nonetheless, they're going to finish with the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, currently on a 5-game winning streak, turning things around. There was all this talk about the whole fight between UD and Spo. Oh, is that going to break the team? This is bad. And, you know, us in Heat Nation, we knew that that's no problem at all. Like, things like this happen. It happened with Wade and Spo before. These are what championship teams do. What does this show? This shows that you give a shit, that you really care, and that you all have the same goal. This is competitive Miami Heat culture. These type of things probably happen in practice time and time again. There's no way in hell that these guys, the way they're so competitive, don't talk shit in practice to each other. So I didn't make nothing of it, but hey, Miami Heat, 52-28, first place in the Eastern Conference. Kevin, what do you think about our Miami Heat thus far?
This is 100% the best Heat season since LeBron, D. Wade, and Bosh, his 2014 season. And yes, they made the finals in 2020, but this team is 20 times better than that right now. You know, you put that 2020 Miami Heat team in today's NBA, third, maybe a fourth seed, fifth. This team is good. This team was built for the regular season, and it's going to be built for the playoffs. You start with the starting five of Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, Strus. The Strus is loose. You have PJ Tucker, and you have Bam Adebayo. That's a great starting five. And I'll highlight Strus. And I was talking to, you know, Jeremy Taché of Bally Sports today, and I told him as a fun pick that Max Strus should be the Miami Heat's MVP of the season. And yes, obviously the pick should be Butler, and I will be honest, it should be. But if you're talking, let's have some fun, Strus should be the Miami Heat's MVP. That Boston game, this whole week has been highlighted by Max Strus. Yesterday, he crossed up LaMelo Ball, he made him fall on the ground, and he hit a three right in his face. And then ESPN's putting a LaMelo Ball highlight when they're down by like 20. But anyways, that's a great starting five. And then you go to the bench, and it gets even better. Tyler Hero, the sixth man of the year, undoubtedly. No one's going to beat that. The guy's averaging 20-something a game. Duncan Robinson, we'll get into later. I have my opinions on him. Then you have Yurtseven Dedmon. Dedmon has been a very sneaky player for Miami this season and a very sneaky good player. You know, you look at the backup centers in this league, Dedmon may be at the top of the list. And Miami has him on a vet minimum. I would love to see what they do next year if they bring him back. You obviously have Yurtseven, who is probably the young guy that you want to bring in. He was also had a good season. Then you have Caleb Martin, went from a two-way to an actual NBA deal. He earned that easily. And then you have the big piece that it's you know, he had a great game against the Raptors. You know who I'm going to talk about right here. It's Victor Oladipo. I really feel bad for the guy because when he played in Toronto, that was his vintage Oladipo self, you know, getting the dunks, making everything happen. I really hate that Oladipo can't get minutes on the Miami Heat. And I don't know what we're going to have to think about in the offseason with Oladipo, because the guys wanted to be in Miami for years now. You know, we know this since his last All-Star appearance with the Pacers, I'm pretty sure he's wanted to be a Miami Heat. It hasn't happened until last season. He was traded, got injured, and now back. What are you going to do? Are you coming back on a cheaper deal? Because you really haven't shown any teams that you're ready to get that big boy deal that, you know, a Duncan Robinson has gotten or any other player in the NBA. So we'll see what happens with Victor Oladipo. But I think the key word with this Miami Heat team is bench depth. They really have depth on this team. And that's something that I love to see. You know, if it was Kyle Guy entering that game on New Year's Eve, hitting those clutch shots for Miami to win that game against Houston, or Highsmith, that's another guy who's been very good for the Miami Heat. I mean, he proved himself to get a three-year deal. So this Heat team is legit, man. And when it comes to the playoffs, I fear almost no team except one. And I'll let you, I guess, roll into that at some point in the pod.
Yeah. I definitely want you to hold that thought for sure. But yeah, I agree with you, man. I mean, this team top to bottom has been so impressive throughout the whole year, you know, and we were scared as Heat fans. I'm pretty sure everybody had the same. Well, at least I did. I felt this way. So the team gets off to a really nice start. We start creeping around, flirting with the first seed with Chicago a bit. We claim it for a little while and, you know, just as normal Heat fans, we don't want to get too excited too early because, you know, over the course of a season, injuries can happen, things can happen, you know, you never know. So I was always on the fence, like, not too excited. I don't want to get too high. I don't want to get too low. I want to stay level. But, man, I mean, as time went by, this Heat team just has showed resiliency, consistency, you know, whether somebody's in or out the lineup. But we lost Bam for quite a couple months. I thought that was going to be such a big blow. And this team just took that hit and just continued to fight, continue to stay in the top of the Eastern Conference. Jimmy Butler was down for quite some time. He missed about over 20 games. And Caleb Martin stepped in and showed how much of a dog he can be. Duncan Duncan Robinson. He's struggling with his shot all season long. You put in a guy like Max Strus. It doesn't really matter what has happened. That's what's crazy about this team, is that this team has faced adversity already. We talked about the fight earlier with the team. All kinds of adversity, and they have literally just overcame every single time, every single time. Coach Spoelstra, even he, look at him. He's without two games. Chris Quinn comes in and gets two freaking wins. I mean, we're down our coach. We're down our player. We're down our center. This shit doesn't matter, man. This Heat team has been so impressive, and I don't understand how national media is not all over this team. But
dangerous,
you know what?
Dangerous loomers, by the way. We're the dangerous loomers.
That's what we are, so be it. I guess we're going to have to prove it in the playoffs. But like you said, not too many teams really scare me at all. With this team top to bottom, man, it's so damn fun to watch. I'm having a lot of fun. And like you said about Max Strus, he's been freaking impressive, man. I mean, you look, I just wonder, like, how the hell do the Heat just continue to get these guys, get the most out of these guys? And it's just credit to Spoelstra and Pat Riley and Heat culture, man, because this is exciting, man. But let's talk about Tyler Hero, first of all. I mean, Tyler Hero has been awesome all year. I think he's the Heat's best player this season. The Heat win when he's playing well. I mean, and his consistency has been crazy. From year one to year two to year three, improving points per game every single season. But the jump he made this year has been impressive. I mean, he's coming off the bench, scoring over 20 points a game, 5 rebounds, 3.9 assists, and he's been consistent as hell, man. Tyler freaking Hero, you got the shirt on right now, repping number 14. I mean, that sixth man of the year's got to be a lock, right?
It has to be. If Tyler Hero doesn't win sixth man of the year, that's rigged. It's rigged. The voting is rigged. The NBA doesn't know what they're talking about. They have no knowledge, because Tyler Hero is easily the sixth man of the year. He is putting NBA starter numbers. He's averaging more points than probably a good amount of the starters in the NBA right now. And that's something that you have to keep in mind. This guy's clutch. He's young. He's probably going to get a very close to the max contract when that comes up. But this guy's legit. And I don't mind if he's not in the starting lineup, because, you know, they have Max Strus over him. Just keep that in mind. He could easily be in that starting lineup right now, but we saw what happened when he was. He was struggling in the starting lineup. So, hey, keep him as the sixth man, and he's going to be probably one of the best sixth man in the NBA in a couple of years. This guy's probably going to be the best player on the Miami Heat in a couple of years once Jimmy, you know, is starting to get on that decline. Bam is already at his peak and starting. Tyler Hero is going to get the reins of this Miami Heat team for many, many years, and I do hope he's a Heat lifer.
Yeah, me too. I think this is going to definitely be the Tyler and Bam team. It's going to be the Tyler and Bam show. That's the future right there. And I hope we never get rid of those two guys, man, because those guys have everything you can ask for. Two Kentucky guys, their work ethic speaks for itself. Bam Adebayo this year having 19 points per game, 10.1 rebounds, 3.4 assists. You look at the assist numbers compared to other years, they went down. But why? It's because you got a guy like Kyle Lowry running point. Bam, take some pressure off Bam and focus more on the rebounding. So I like the season from Bam Adebayo. I know a lot of people are really critical about him, you know, being more aggressive, shooting more jump shots. But at the end of the day, what Bam is able to do and provide on offense, rebounding, defense, leadership, determination, hustle, you name it, he checks all kinds of boxes. That I love Bam Adebayo's play. What about you? Are you happy with Bam's play, or are you like other members of Heat Nation that just want to see more? Where are you with Bam?
I love Bam, man. I mean, there's no way this guy, you have to be happy with Bam. That's pretty much what I'm trying to say here. Bam is probably one of the best players on this Miami Heat team. He's probably the second best player behind Jimmy. When Jimmy first came into Miami, he obviously said many times that Bam is the best player on this team. It's Jimmy, but Bam's number two. This season, you could arguably say Bam's been the best player besides Tyler Hero, because Hero's just gotten to a new level of all-star. He should have been an all-star player as well as Bam. Who cares at this point? But, man, Bam's the defensive player of the year, in my opinion. This guy has shown it all. One of the best defensive players in the NBA. The best defensive player in the NBA. You know, who cares about Rudy Gobert? You have Bam Adebayo who could do it all. Bam has brought in the point center, which you've never seen in before. You've never seen a center bring up the ball like Bam does. You know, setting up Duncan for the open three, which he will miss at the end of the day. Who cares? But, you know, this guy is setting up the players perfectly, and I love Bam. Man, I just want him to develop some kind of three ball. If he could get a three-point game, Bam would probably be the best center in the NBA. And I don't care if there's a Joel Embiid here. because Joel Embiid could shoot the three. That's the thing. If Bam could do that, he'd probably be a top three center in the NBA, because you also have Karl Anthony Towns, who won the three-point contest. And I'm saying that in quote because that three-point contest was pretty bad. And then you have Joel Embiid, who could do it all, seven-footer. So Bam, well, next season, I think he'll be a top three center. I just hope he develops the three-point game.
Yeah, I think he'll get there. You know, obviously, I talked about his work ethic. You know, the dude works hard as hell. He's determined as hell. Wants to be a Heat player for life. So I think he'll get there, man. I think he's just he's progressing, and he's progressing at a fine level, at a fine rate, in my opinion. He's still young as hell. He's only going to grow. He's only going to get better and better. I mean, the ceiling, he has no ceiling, like they say. But playoffs right around the corner. This is the last week of the regular season, and there's just – you look at this team, there's one player that concerns me with this Heat team, and that's Duncan Robinson, man. Duncan Robinson has been a player that has, compared to last year, and when you look at the efficiency of how well he was shooting that three ball, then you pay him the amount of money that we paid him, that I feel like we had to pay him, and he has been struggling all season long. And of course, he's had a couple games where he's popped off and a couple good games here and there. That's fine. Yeah, but when you, you know, those Heat fans, I mean, you got to be honest with yourself. If you watch this Heat season entirely, you know Duncan Robinson is not having a Duncan Robinson type of season, not living up to that money that we paid him. You know, I was always like, oh, you know, this is a little slump, you know, because I know he works hard. He talks about how hard he works. You can see the determination. He's honestly pissed off that he's sucking. But it's been a couple of months now, almost the whole season's gone by, and he has not shown me any inch of confidence, and not even Spoelstra. To now, it's to a point where he's playing like 15 minutes a game coming off the bench, and Max is playing 32, making nearly a minimum contract. But, you know, to his credit, he is cutting back door. He's trying harder on defense. He has improved as a defender a little bit, but so at least he's trying hard. But I don't know, man. Do you think, you know, this move to Duncan coming off the bench, will that be helpful in the playoffs, or are you just out on Duncan Robinson?
I'm not out. I'm not out. Definitely not. I think he could bounce back next season. And I think that you could think of that he's been kind of exposed. You know, this guy, nobody knew about him. Nobody. And let's be honest, not even I knew who Duncan Robinson was when he first came into Miami Heat. This guy starts shooting threes. He's shooting out of the parking lot in FTX Arena. I'm sorry. You know, 2020 playoffs, this guy's just dominant. No one could stop him. 2021, if you remember, his first half of the season right before the deadline, he wasn't that good. He was okay. You know, it wasn't now Duncan Robinson today, but he wasn't that good. After the deadline, he knew he wasn't going to be traded. He knew that for sure. He's going in there and he just has a dominant second half of the NBA season. And you go and you're in that contract. And you know, now that you think of it, he got the same contract pretty much Hassan Whiteside got, if you don't remember that. I think it was 4 for 90 or 99, something like that. Duncan Robinson may be the next Hassan Whiteside of the Miami Heat. And I hope he's not, because I love Duncan. He's such a good guy. You know, you see him on his own podcast doing his thing. It looks like he works really hard, because and I do think he does, because he hasn't posted one in a long time, if I'm correct, but he's a good player. He's shown that he could be really good. I mean, when he was even earning the league minimum, or he was on the two-way, he was playing very good minutes for the Miami Heat. He was one of the big reasons why we were in the NBA Finals in 2020. I'm not out on Duncan, but if he doesn't show me a good 2022-2023 season, at least the first half, then you got to start thinking, all right, we got to be out on this guy. And that is also, you have to think, if Max Strus is going to be on the Miami Heat next season, because teams are going to be calling for Max Strus. I would be very shocked if Miami is the only team that makes a move for him and gets him on the low ball, because this guy has shown that he could do it all, defense, offense. You know, Miami Heat's one of probably the best team taking charges in the NBA. And Strus, you saw it against Tatum in that Boston game. That was probably iconic for this season, in my opinion, you know. So teams are going to be calling for him. Teams are going to be calling at least Oladipo to get a little bit more than the vet minimum he's currently earning. So, you know, you also have to keep that in mind. But I really hope Duncan Robinson's could have a better season than he's having right now, because a good Duncan Robinson could shoot the lights out of that ball and really put you in a position of, let's win this game and let's not have to use the whole bench because your production isn't the best right now.
Yeah, I really hope so, man, because like I said, his, you know, his work ethic, you know, he definitely works hard. He cares about it. He's obviously upset that he's in a slump. So that's one thing that I like to see. At least you care.
You could see it on his face and how he's playing on the court that he's pissed, you know, exactly. And I wish he could use that as motivation and let's go, because, you know, you got to do admit he's been a little bit of a distraction when it comes to on the court. Everyone's going to expect Duncan Robinson to get the ball. And that's probably the best positive of him sucking right now. He's kind of like that decoy player. You know, you have Strus, you have Robinson, you have Hero on the same court. You have Strus and Hero who are actually playing pretty well this season. Robinson's the decoy. Now, that's the only positive about him sucking, but you don't want that. So that's something else you got to keep in mind. But this guy has improved defense, and I do think and this is just me, in my opinion, my brain going through this. I think he worked more on his defense this offseason than the offense, and that's something that could be affecting him. I'm not sure, but that's just something to keep in mind.
Right. I mean, I will see how it goes. I do like, honestly, I like the fact that he's coming off the bench, you know, playing against these second string people, because, you know, the first team players, they're better defenders. Their scouting report, they're just on top of everybody, and they know that, you know, don't let Duncan Robinson get open. And, you know, he kind of got exposed. So the fact that he's playing against second stringers, obviously the scouting report is still the same. People know, but it's a little bit easier probably to get better looks, to get more open. And he has been getting a lot of open looks. He hasn't been making them as consistently as I would like, but he's getting the open looks. I mean, it's only a matter of time, especially playoff time. Maybe he'll go on a playoff run. I mean, we've seen players that have struggled in the regular season come alive in the playoffs. We saw Fred VanVleet a couple years ago in that championship run. He was sucking the entire playoffs. Then, you know, his wife had the baby, and then he could not miss in the NBA finals. So things like that can happen. So hopefully it happens for Duncan Robinson. And I actually want to ask you, you know, who is your X factor to the Heat season, like in this playoff run? Like, basically, if this guy plays good, like, that's the most important piece, and that's how far we'll go. To me, I'm going to go with my answer. You know, we have a lot of great candidates. You can choose a Max Strus. You can choose Bam. To me, I'm pretty – you know what you're getting from Bam. You know what you're getting from Jimmy. You know what you're getting from Tyler and Kyle.
We may have the same answer.
You think so? I'm going with Duncan Robinson. I'm actually going with Duncan. Listen, if Duncan Robinson gives you Duncan Robinson of the playoff, the finals run, Duncan Robinson even of last year, to pair with this team, there's no way in hell that we're losing against anybody. I can promise you that. I mean, if you add another element to this team, and that's Duncan of last year to this team, I think he's the X factor. I think 100%. You get that Duncan, we're on our way to the finals, no doubt about it. But who's your X factor?
I have PJ Tucker.
I think
it's a good pick. It's an okay pick.
Love it. You know it.
Look, 2021, Milwaukee made the finals and got past the Brooklyn Nets because of how PJ Tucker guarded Kevin Durant that series. That's number one. Miami was in the running for PJ Tucker in 2021. They didn't get him. They got him this time around. He goes to the team that he beat 4-0 in the NBA playoffs in the first round. Never want to talk about that series again, but PJ Tucker is going to be really damn good in the playoffs. I just feel it that he's coming up. And the only other candidate that I really did have in mind was Victor Oladipo. Let's say there's an injury. Victor Oladipo, you know, that Toronto game is a big say on how hard he's worked and his improvement from last season's and the seasons going forward. You know, if we could get vintage Oladipo coming off the bench and he's not even getting minutes at all, and all of a sudden, let's say, I don't know, Caleb Martin gets injured, Victor Oladipo is going to step in that role and he's going to play well. I really do think he is, and he's a great defender. He was on the All-NBA defensive team at some point, so I think Oladipo could be one, but my initial answer will be PJ Tucker and his immense defense. He's one of the best three-point shooters on the Heat, too, when you look at it, from the corner at least. He's one of the best percentage shooters in the NBA in the corner.
Yeah, I love that. I love that choice. I love that pick. I'm a huge PJ Tucker fan. And another reason why I like that, because obviously, you know, his defense is top notch. He has the experience. He's a champion last year. And you can also argue, you know, God forbid Jimmy goes down, we have a replacement. God forbid Tyler goes down, we have somewhat of a replacement. We have replacements in every position. But if PJ goes down, you know, Morris, you don't know. Honestly, that's a toss-up. But I feel like he's, like, without PJ Tucker, you're right. I think he is an X factor for sure. That's why I love that pick, because we can't afford to lose the guy, and that's an example of an X factor. I think he's going to turn it up come playoff time. And I'm excited, man. But that leads me to my final question before we talk some Marlins baseball here. You know, you got teams in the East. Boston has stepped up big time. 76ers haven't looked too well, but they do have James Harden. Toronto has looked awesome. Chicago's on a bit of a downfall, but they're still Chicago. You know, Cleveland, downfall. Brooklyn Nets, obviously with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, the Milwaukee Bucks, the champions last year. Who is your biggest threat in the East? Like, which matchup scares you the most as our final question here before we wrap up?
Let's start with the ones that are not, you know? Milwaukee doesn't scare me. I think we could beat them in the 7-game series. Philadelphia doesn't scare me. The team that scares me is the Toronto Raptors, man. That team is really good. Like, if they get past the first round of the playoffs, which I think at the moment they're playing the 4 seed, which is Philly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they could beat Philly, man. This team is so stressful. I was saying this on Twitter yesterday. Toronto is a stressful team to play against when you look at it. Van Vliet, Gary Trent, you have Ochoa, former Miami Heat legend. I mean, you got his Kyle Lowry. You look at that team and it's scary, man. You would have thought that team wasn't going to do anything. And I didn't even mention Pascal Siakam, probably their best player on that team. I mean, that's a scary team, man. I mean, they went 3-0 into triple overtime with the Heat. We were losing by 10 in going into halftime on this week. I mean, and that was without Jimmy and Bam. So imagine how that matchup is going to go. I do think Miami will beat Toronto if they ever do face. But the last time they played in the playoffs, let's remember what happened. We went all the way to 7 with them, and we unfortunately lost that game. That was the game 1 Kyle Lowry half-court buzzer beater in the Eastern Conference semifinals. So it's Toronto. Toronto scares me. I don't think we'll see Brooklyn in round 1 at all, because if we lock in that first seed, they'll be winning their play-in game against Cleveland, and they'll be the 7. That doesn't scare me. You know, Philly doesn't scare me. I don't care about James Harden and Embiid. They're really good players. That team is, I thought they were going to get the first seed, to be honest with you, once they made that trade, but Miami stayed packed and they stayed tough. I mean, they beat Philly pretty much every game this season, besides that one, which was an absolute disappointment. The last one, no Embiid, no Harden. That should have been an easy win, but you know, it's okay. We're still the first seed. We'll still, I think, beat them in a 7-game series. So I'm excited. And if you look at playoff preview a little bit, I think the team we'll see is the Cleveland Cavaliers. That team is pretty gritty. That's a gritty and grind team. A lot there. You have Evan Mobley, who's at the moment, I think, injured. You have Darius Garland, who's just having an all-star season. That team's, yes, downfall, but very good team at the moment. So I wouldn't be shocked. And then the other two teams would be Charlotte and Atlanta, or division rivals, which we beat them, I think. Yeah, we swept them this season, except Atlanta. I think we lost that one game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Toronto, good pick, by the way. That's a team also that scares me as well. I've talked about this on my podcast. You know, Nick Nurse, phenomenal coach, and that team plays together. Their chemistry is top-notch. They can defend. They can switch everybody. Everybody knows how to defend. There's no egos. This, honestly, their team resembles our team, honestly. I always think like the Raptors and the Heat, you know, both are well coached, both have a culture, both have great chemistry, both great teams have no great scouting departments. They get the best out of these no-name guys or guys that people don't really pay attention to. You know, look at Chris Boucher, for example. That guy's playing unbelievable. You know, they got Van Vliet. Van Vliet was undrafted. You know, things of that sort. Like, they resemble a lot of the things that the Miami Heat do. So that's why I agree with you as well. That is the team that scares me. I wanted no parts of them. I was a little worried when they were at the bottom half of the Eastern Conference, so I'm just happy that they've climbed along so we can avoid them.
Clinch. No one expects Toronto to be where they are today. That's why that's why they deserve a fair shout out. This team is built for the playoffs as well. When you look at it, they're so scrappy. They're just a fun team to watch, man. Mm-hmm. You look at them, and I wish I was, you know, if there was a team that you wouldn't root for, let's say, and the Heat weren't in the playoffs, God forbid, you know, they will always be in the playoffs at the moment. But Toronto would be that team to root for, because they resemble the Heat, as you mentioned. I mean, that's a fun team to watch. And especially, you know, they got former Heat legend Precious Achiuwa, got his Kyle Lowry. We have to remember that. So, and Dragic was on that team for a couple weeks. So,
yeah, hey, that's good points. And they're 7-3 in their last 10 games. So they've been playing great basketball.
Yeah, they have.
But other than that, I mean, Boston's playing well, but they don't worry me. Philly, I'm on the same boat as you. Chicago, I'm not scared of. Brooklyn, surprisingly, I'm not scared of either. I'll take them even if we play them round 1.
I don't care if we lost by 30 against KD and Kyrie. I don't think we had was that a fully healthy game for us? We had everyone?
Man, I really erased that off my mind.
I did, too. I erased that whole week.
after that, that disgusting half, you know, I just quickly forgot about it.
I think we're fully healthy. But
nonetheless, I mean, the teams that besides Toronto that scared me is Milwaukee, because at the end of the day, they were the champs last year. And, you know, Giannis is unbelievable. You know, Drew Holiday is unbelievable when he's locked in. Chris Middleton just really seems to get us every time. Bobby Portis is a pain in the ass against us. Yep. Like, I'm still, you know, I'm still worried. I mean, you know, do I think we could beat them? Absolutely. Hell yeah. But if I had to say, like, who scares me the most, it's the defending champs, Milwaukee Bucks. And they've, you know, it's a great rivalry that we have between them. So I do hope that we do play them. I'm by no means, I'm not, I don't want to avoid them. I want to beat that damn team.
Oh,
but they worry me the most.
This time around, that is probably going to be one of the best feelings in a while, because Miami beat them in 2020. They whooped our ass in 2021, to be honest. And then
now it's our turn.
Now it's our turn. Now it's our turn to get revenge and make it happen. And that team got a lot better too. So I want to beat the Drew Holiday Milwaukee Bucks now, because Drew was not on the Bucks in 2020. They had Bledsoe. No. Yeah.
He was in it last year and he made a big, big difference. But we'll see how it goes, man.
I'm excited.
Are he are damn right looking well, looking great, looking ready for the playoffs.
White
season
hot
ends.
Playoffs.
Yes. Season ends this week. Playoffs are going to be awesome to watch. And now let's shift things on over to some Miami Marlins talk, some baseball talk. We have opening day here today, by the time people are listening to this podcast. It's awesome. I mean, the Marlins open up on Friday. Everyone, you know, a lot of great teams are playing today. It's going to be awesome. But the Marlins have made some nice, nice additions, which the fan base has been desperate for some good additions. And they made a couple splashes, man. You know, getting a guy like Avisel Garcia on a four-year deal, getting guys like Jacob Stalling, adding a catcher, obviously Joey Wendell as well, and other great pieces, man. Talk to me, man. How do you feel about this offseason approach for the Miami Marlins, and how do you feel looking into this season?
Miami went into the offseason with a lot of holes, you know. First, the catcher. We solved that with Jacob Stallings. You know, he was on the Pittsburgh Pirates last season, didn't allow a single pass ball. This guy was really good for the Pirates. All we had to give up was two top 30 guys and Zach Thompson, who was a very nice pitcher for us last season. Mm-hmm. Stallings won the gold glove, meaning he's probably the best defensive catcher in the league. And in my opinion, he is 100%. And he has a little bit of pop in the bat, not too much. He's a low, you know, bottom of the order guy, but that's a great move. And then you go into Avisel Garcia, who was another need. We needed an outfielder because Lewis Brinson wasn't going to pan out for us. And all these guys, Monte Harrison, you know, you guys know the players, but you go into Avisel, I think it was a little bit too many years. I think 3 years would have been nice. Pretty much the contract Jorge Soler got. I mean, that would have been a great sign. That would have been a nice little contract there. We signed 4 years, $53 million, good contract. You spoke about Joey Wendell. I love that move. You know, you get a super utility guy who you could have on your bench, and you could probably play every other day if you really want to. Brian Anderson is an injury-prone third baseman who's been taking reps in left field this spring training. Wendell could easily fill out that void. I made the prediction that Joey Wendell, although he's on the bench, he's gonna be leading the Miami Marlins in hits. And then the guys that we re-signed, because something that this organization hasn't been doing throughout this rebuild, the Sherman Jeter left, has been keeping guys and showing that they want to keep them. You know, besides Isan Diaz, Magnery Sierra, all these bums that they had, no offense to them, they're great. You know, they started panning out at some point, but I wish them the best. Mag's got a job. Isan is still on the team. He's in the organization, is in AAA. Monte is now with the Angels, and Brinson's with the Houston Astros. So they all found their homes, but they just didn't pan out, unfortunately, here. You know, they upgraded. Miami upgraded. That's at the end of the day. They made big-time upgrades, and there's still one need left for Miami, which is that center field spot. You know, Brian Reynolds was the big talk. I thought it was going to happen. I was a big advocate for Brian Reynolds. I did not care what it took for Miami to make that happen. They didn't make it happen, unfortunately, but you know, I think they'll revisit that in the trade deadline. There was a trade. Jeter vetoed it. So, it was going to happen. Kim and
for Max,
like
right?
It was Max Meyer, mm-hmm. Peyton Burdick. It was Khalil Watson. So something of that sort. You know, the trade, according to good friend Craig Mish, he said that was going to hurt the farm system. And I agree. You know, you trade Max Meyer, who could be in the rotation right now. That's big time. And then the final big time signing that they made was Jorge Soler, Cuban outfielder, World Series MVP. So this is the first time the Marlins acquire a World Series MVP, and he leaves the team and joins Miami. Cuban guy, he's going to fill up the stands a little bit there. He's going to be in left field. So the outfield is going to be Jesus Sanchez in left, in center. You have Avisaí on right. You have Jorge Soler in left. I assume Jesus and Avisaí are going to be platooning that center field spot. I don't think Jesus is going to take all the reps there, but he will take the good majority of them. So that's another signing. And finally, the big trade that went down a couple days ago, and then did one just today as we're recording this video. They traded away Antonio Velez, Kevin Guerrero, a comp pick for Cole Sulcer and Tanner Scott. Two nice relievers that Miami desperately needed.
Which they need. Yep.
They needed. We finally got our closer, Cole Sulcer. Very nice player. He had 8 saves. Now, that's with a grain of salt because the Baltimore Orioles were horrible in 2021. I think they lost over 100 games, so they were a bad team. So not many save opportunities. Tanner Scott is probably the nicer name to talk about here. He hasn't been too good, but, you know, I think he could be good for the Marlins. You're going into with Mel Stoudemire Jr., the Marlins pitching coach. That's a great pitching coach. You know, look at Sandy, look at Trevor Rogers, Jesus Luzardo, who I think will have a breakout season. Those are some of the moves. And then the one that just went down today, right before we started recording, which was Alex Jackson getting traded out of the Marlins catcher they acquired last season. And the return was prospects Alexei Ramirez and Hayden Cantrell. Now, Hayden Cantrell is a top 30, according to MLB Pipeline, in the Brewers system. But that's, again, with the light grain of salt, as the system is not too good. So he's exactly the number 30, guys. So he will not be a top 30 for Miami unless Nick Fortes graduates or something of that circumstance. And then you have Alexei Ramirez, right-handed pitcher. That name sounds a little bit familiar as Alexei Ramirez, Cuban shortstop. I think he's either the nephew or the son. I'm not quite sure right now, but I know they have some type of relation there. So Miami, you know, they got some good value for Austin, Alex Jackson, a guy who did not pan out for the Marlins. We traded Gold Glove outfielder Adam Duvall for, but this team looks good, man. I'm very excited. They also got Lewis Head, a nice reliever who's worked out well for the Marlins in spring training. They extended Blyer, they extended Rojas, but probably the best move with them all, and you know where I'm going with. We were talking about this guy's last name just before. They re-signed Sandy Alcantara to a 5-year deal worth $63 million. That's a steal for the type of caliber he could give you. He's probably going to be a dark horse pick for the Cy Young. I think he could finish top 5 in there. He's going to have a big time season for the Marlins. This is something that they had to do to show commitment to the players, and this is definitely the big one. They also signed Miggy Rota, a 2-year, $10 million deal. Love it. He's probably going to start going on a decline soon, so that's why they brought in Joey Wendell. They'll probably platoon at shortstop, which I love. Then the final guy who they brought in who has not had a good spring training is Richard Blyer. They kept an only 2-year deal worth $6 million. So that's another good one. So that's a little bit refresher of what the Marlins did in the offseason. And this is going to be a fun year, man. This is probably the most competitive team that Sherman has brought out to us since the start of the rebuild. And I don't care, you know, 2020, it was everything worked out well for this team besides the COVID stuff. You know, you got the right replacements to make it all work. So this is fun. Miami's going to be a fun team to watch. And watch out, because this team could really surprise many, especially in an expanded playoffs with the new CBA and having the DH, which Garrett Cooper will be the happiest man on that team with that news.
For sure. More at-bats for Coop brings more smiles on Marlins fans' faces. So,
hell yeah.
I mean, I'm excited, man. I'm excited because we got to taste that playoffs again in Miami during that COVID season, which was fun. Then last year, a little bit of a down year. You know, we showed a lot of glimpses, but ultimately, you know, we ended in bad fashion. So I'm glad that the Marlins were able to make moves, you know, use some money, spend some money, make some trades, and were really active, man, because this fan base, obviously, you know, a lot of people talk about the fan base and not attending that many games. Those who are there are loyal as hell, including, you know, myself, yourself, a lot of guys out there on our Twitter that we talk to daily. And like we're passionate fans and we deserve it. So I'm glad that they were able to make moves and actually provide a nice competitive team that it looks like, because I think it's going to be a fun season. Just like you said, you know, the Marlins have potential, all these additions, you know, addressing the outfield. There's still some positions, like you said, center field that I think need to be addressed. But we'll see if that happens in the deadline. Max Meyer, I know that was going to be, I heard Craig Mish talking about it last season. Man, I really thought they were going to pull the trigger and get in Reynolds, but we'll see how it goes. Marte, though, I wanted Marte to get re-signed, man. How did you feel about Marte and then ultimately, you know, having to let him go?
Oh, you know, that was unnecessary. The trade was unnecessary. All of that from last season, completely unnecessary. Shouldn't have happened. If you would have offered him the offer that Miami gave him this offseason, which was 4 years, $68 million, he would have taken that with in a heartbeat, he would have taken that because it just made sense. The guy was probably the best player Sherman has brought in since the regime has started and all that good stuff. He was the best Marlins player. There's a reason why they made it wasn't even a big trade. They pretty much fleeced the Angels, the Diamondbacks in that trade, but Marte was a good player. I don't care about the age. I think he's 30-something. I don't care. This guy was putting up extremely good numbers for the Marlins.
Batting over 300.
Yeah, exactly, man. This guy did it all. Defense, offense, great person in the locker room. There was no need to make that trade. Now, we made the trade, and we got a nice young pitcher in Jesus Luzardo. I think the big need was center field, especially in that trade deadline market. We got in Brian De La Cruz, who's one of our, you know, I don't know if you know him on Twitter, but Noah Berger, train boy. I don't know if you've seen him around there, but he loves the guy. So Brian De La Cruz. So no, but Luzardo's a good player. I do like him. He has some command issues, but besides that, man, I think he's going to be the breakout star in the pitching rotation this season for the Marlins. I think everyone's going to elevate their game to the next level, but Luzardo's really good, man. And I think he's going to pan out well. Now, when you go into free agency, Miami, I think, did make their best offer, which was 4 for $68 million. I think he was gonna sign with Miami until the Mets stepped in last minute, offered him 4 for $79 million. I don't think you could pass up on a better deal like that. You're going to New York, this bright spot. You know, you're playing starting center field, if I'm correct, or he's gonna take one of the two corner spots for the team. I think it's gonna be center. Yeah, it should be center field. That's pretty much what he plays. That's his best spot. Yeah, so Starlin Marte is a hell of a player. You know, I wish him the best in New York. I would have loved to see him come back to Miami, because if they made that move, you brought him back and you probably don't have a Visayo Garcia or a Jorge Soler. One of the two wouldn't be there right now. I could pretty much assure you, but it sucks, man. That shouldn't have happened. They should have extended him early, right when he could, because Miami
would
look a lot different. And he wanted to stay. That's the thing. You know, he went on Swings and Misses, great pod. I think they're dropping an episode today, Friday. So a lot. Yeah, he wanted to stay. Sucks he didn't. I think at the end of the day, you went for the money. You've already proven your talents to every team. Now it's just see you could get that last big contract, because once again, he's getting up there in age.
Right. Yeah, I wish he stayed too, man. Like, just main reason, because he wanted to stay. He was willing to take probably
not
less at the time.
Not many Marlins players say that, by the way, especially in public.
Exactly, and let alone a player that's batting 300. Come on, batting over 300, it was easy for him, man. That guy had an unbelievable run with Miami. But short-lived. But yeah, I wish him, well, can't even wish him the best because he's on the Mets. But you know what I'm saying, man. So other news, Derek Jeter stepping down. What are your thoughts on Derek Jeter stepping down? That caught me by surprise. I was not expecting that news. And when it broke, I was just like, wow. But What are your thoughts about Derek Jeter stepping down? And like, why did he step down?
It was a good story of how I found out. I was in school and all of a sudden pulled up the phone, ESPN, Derek Jeter stepping down. I'm like, what? it was just shock. You wouldn't expect the guy. Obviously, he was on the last year of his deal. As a CEO, he's the owner of the team, so it's a little bit complicated. He signed a 5-year deal to be the CEO of the Marlins, so he would run the whole team. But after that, you would have assumed he's gone as CEO, they would have brought a new one, but he would have kept his stake of the team, which was like 4%, something like that. So he's gone. The big reason was that he didn't see the future that a guy like Sherman didn't have, you know. The big thing was that he left over 10, 15 million. I don't buy that in a million years, because that's not what it would take to sign a Nicholas Castellanos, which was the big target that he was trying to go for. It looked like it was going to happen, but he left. You know, and something else you got to keep in mind, it looked like he was a little bit of a prospect hugger. You know, he vetoed that trade for Brian Reynolds. We would have had a nice player with Nicholas Castellanos in right, and then you could have put Jesus Sanchez in left. That team would look a lot nicer. But at the end of the day, he left. The vision wasn't there. Now the Miami will look into having a new CEO. They will be doing that interview process, I assume, at some point. At the moment, Kim Ng, who is the first lady manager, woman manager in the NFL, she's in the MLB is taking over. She's going to have more say in everything. So I'm very excited to see what Kemeng's going to do. But once again, going back to Jeter, it was just shocking, man. I mean, no one expected it. You know, Miguel Rojas, who was on the Chris Rose rotation, right there, he just said he had no idea that was going to happen. And a lot found out through that Mish bomb, which is what we call it here. There's the Woj bomb. There's the Mish bomb now for Marlins Twitter. You know, I think happened is Jeter sat down with Sherman. They talked and he said, I want a new contract. We can't give you that until we see some type of result this season, is what Sherman would have told Jeter. And then he said, all right, I'm going to sell my portion of the team and I'm out of here. You know, you guys don't see what I'm seeing at the moment with the team. We're trying to build a sustainable winner. That hasn't happened. And, you know, I wish him nothing but the best wherever he's going to go now. Hopefully not back to the Yankees. You could see, I think he will, but at the end of the day, I don't think he's going to be a CEO anymore in his career. He already did that. Now you got to give him props. He did some nice moves. That Marcelo Ozuna trade has turned out to be Sandy Alcantara, Jazz Chisholm Jr. So that's a nice one there. He also made, he's had some salary dumps with Stanton. The Yelich trade was horrible and probably the worst trade in Marlins history. And that's over the Miguel Cabrera trade. And he did rebuild the farm system. You have to keep that in mind. They went from probably one of the worst farm systems in the MLB to a top three farm system in the MLB at the moment. I think not top five with some of the guys graduating, some of them not panning out. You know, you have Seattle, Baltimore in there. They have really nice farm systems. Then you could look at Miami as the second tier of nice farm systems. So I'll give him props to that. And he did get us to the playoffs. You know, he was in there for that 2020 season. He made a lot of those moves. A lot of the guys that he brought in replacement were part of that playoff team and he made it happen. So I give him, you know, I respect the guy a lot as a player and for what he did for the team. He did a lot of good community work outside, getting the fans involved as much as he could. Although, you know, a lot of the fans didn't like the team. They wouldn't show up to the ballpark. But outside, you know, those little small events that he would do, very nice for the community. So I respect him for that. And I wish him nothing but the best. And yeah, very shocking news in my opinion.
Yeah, I was really shocked as well. But I think he did, you know, like you said, he rebuilt the farm system, made a top three. I think he did some solid things, a lot of underrated things, a lot of things that we might be able to see in the future and we can give him credit for. So, you know, I wish him nothing but the best as well. Yep. For Derek Jeter. Another thing that excites me about this Marlins season, man, not only the offseason moves that we made with the additions on the offensive end and the bullpen, but that starting pitching rotation, man. We talk about Sandy, and you said his potential is he can be a Cy Young player. He can be an all-star this year. We've seen his command. We've seen his ability to just take over games and just really, really set the tone early, go long in games, pitch eight-inning games like it's in his sleep. We know what Sandy can be, and we all expect Sandy to be that top guy. But a guy like Trevor Rogers last year, man, making it to the All-Star game, had a record of 7-8, but those who watch the Marlins games know that that's not really what his record should have been. A lot of games where he should have won, where he had no run support, and that's all the pitchers pretty much. But the main thing is you look at that ERA. Made the All-Star game, his ERA 2.64. This is a left-handed pitcher. The dude looked like a stud, man. Do you think... is he going to have an even better season? What's Trevor Rogers' potential, in your opinion?
This guy probably could be a Cy Young candidate as well. You know, you look at that pitching staff at the moment, that rotation. Besides, you know, you look at Sandy, Pablo, Trevor, and then you have Eliezer and Jesus Luzardo. You look at Pablo, Trevor, those guys could be a number one or number two starter on a lot of other MLB teams when you look at it. You know, you have the Arizona Diamondbacks, he would easily be a number one starter. You look at a team like maybe the San Francisco Giants, he could have been a number one starter. You know, that's a very competitive team. You look at a team like the Orioles, number one starter, Pittsburgh Pirates, their ace. So, yeah, man, Trevor Rogers is very good going down into him. He had a great rookie season. Now, I think Sandy should have made the All-Star game over him, but he obviously he was the better player at the time. He was playing very nicely. Besides that shaky start in the first game of the season for him, his first start against St. Louis, he just impressed everyone. He was lights out. You know, at some point, I think he had a lower ERA than Max Scherzer, and he played less games than Max Scherzer. That's one big reason why he could have won Rookie of the Year, but it's okay. You know, keep doubting the guy if you want. You know, Jonathan India was a very good player. So, you know, I think he deserved it a little bit more than Trevor, especially towards the end of the season. Trevor just really, after he had to go due to some personal issues, he came back, just didn't go too many innings and didn't hit the pitch speeds that we usually saw him throughout the first half of the season. But Trevor's potential, man. I mean, this guy could be a Cy Young candidate for the team. He is has ace potential. I think he should have been the number two starter. It's going to be Pablo, but having Trevor's the number three starter is really damn scary, man. You look at it, this guy in the middle of that rotation, you start with Sandy, then you go to Pablo. He gives you nice innings, probably one of the most consistent Marlins pitchers when it comes to consistent performances. In 2020, Pablo was their best pitcher. So now you go into Trevor Rogers. This guy is really damn good, man. I mean, I love Trevor Rogers. This was the now this is funny. He was the final pick of the Loria era for Miami. So he's the final first round pick that they made, and he's the one who's very much panned out because a lot of the guys from the Loria era are now gone. Really, the one that has stayed around have been Miguel Rojas, Pablo Lopez, who was acquired. I think it was the David Phelps trade. Then you also have now Trevor Rogers. So those are just some of the guys there who were acquired by that regime, the old regime, we would say now. And they've all panned out. So I love it. Trevor's potential is very high. He has a very high ceiling, but his floor is also extremely high. So I love Trev. This guy's going to be really good. And I think he could be the number two start as well as the future for the Miami Marlins if you deal away Pablo Lopez at some point throughout the season, because that looks likely as well.
Yeah, I agree, man. I'm excited for Trevor Rogers' potential, his upside for sure. I could see Pablo possibly being on the move for sure. You know, having that many great starting pitchers, you can definitely be able to try to improve elsewhere, and you feel comfortable with that. Another person that I actually want to know an update on personally, what's the latest on Sixto Sanchez, man?
Sixto, el Bobo. Oh, man. That guy, he's going to come at some point back this season. He's going to start in the minors. He's currently injured. He's not throwing too much. The last time I saw him, which was a couple weeks ago in Jupiter, I think it was 2 weeks ago. You know, he's really bulky. And when I mean bulky, I mean, he's pretty fat. He's not in shape. Looks like he's trying to get out there. But yeah, man, this is a guy who has so much potential, but just doesn't have the work ethic, just doesn't show it. I mean, He re-injured his arm, if I'm correct. So he had another injury, which is going to keep him out till mid-season. I think the most that he will do for the Marlins if he comes up to the major league team will be probably a nice bullpen piece at most. That's pretty much where I see him. You know, he went from a MLB starting pitcher who had amazing 2020. He pitched a playoff game for the Marlins, helped them to what he is now. You know, my top prospects ranking hasn't came out, but he's in the top 10. He was in the top 5 for me last time. I dropped him down 9. And that may drop a little bit more now, but, you know, damn. Unfortunate situation for him. The Marlins officially, I think, lost the Real Muto trade there. Alfaro's gone. Will Stewart really isn't going to be anything. He had a good chance to make the roster this season, but just not a good spring. Sixto was the only real hope of that trade, and unfortunately didn't work out. But, yeah, there's your update. He's probably not coming back till probably after the All-Star break, I could assume. And I wouldn't be surprised if they trade him, but there's no team that's going to want that type of a player on your team who's always on Instagram and not on the field.
Damn, that sucks, man. Because that first season was so promising. You see the potential in him. You know how much of a top prospect he was. You saw the fire, the passion, the energy. You know, he pitched with that passion, man. And, you know, it's been a while since we had a player pitch with that much passion. You know, you think of, you know, a little bit of Jose and as far as energy goes. And you had the glimpse like, man, maybe this could be, you know, a type of similar player. And then how quick it just downfalled you know, his injuries and then the way he portrays himself and his work ethic and, you know, him showing up out of shape, like you said, that's just unfortunate, man, because you know the potential is there, but the work ethic is not. And that really stinks because, man, how nice would it have been, you know, add this rotation with Sixto, if Sixto wanted to be Sixto, like, man, that sucks, But also, besides the pitching rotation, another player that really caught a lot of people's eyes and was the most fun to watch all season from an offensive and defensive, that's not a pitcher, and that's Jazz Chisholm, man. What do you make of Jazz Chisholm's upside, and what are your predictions for his season this coming year?
He's going to have a good season. I'll say that. I mean, he was the Marlins' top number two prospect, surprisingly, at some point, and Victor Mesa was over him. Yikes. But, you know, Chisholm's good. He's a good player. He had some up and downs in 2021. I mean, he started off the season pretty well. Then he got that down stretch and then he got injured, came back, wasn't too good. We'll see him at second base. He'll be the starting second baseman for sure on this team. There's no way he gets traded. He's a for sure lock there. He's the face of the franchise, as MLB The Show now calls it, I guess. Somehow he's the face of the franchise. I respect the guy, but I think it should be Sandy. You know, Chisholm's a good player. He could be very good for the Marlins. I think he'll have a 30-30 season. Nice prediction here to put in that he will lead the NL in stolen bases. I think he could definitely do that one. He has 30 home run potential as well. I think he's a nice power hitting second baseman. Now, the big issue with Chisholm is his defense, and he cannot make routine plays for his life. That's something that I think he should work on with the new third base coach or the new hitting defensive coach as well, infield coach Alperrique. I think he's going to be very good. So I'm excited to see what Chisholm's got. He's not my breakout candidate, but he's definitely number two on my list at the moment. But yeah, Chisholm's going to be a good player for the Marlins this season. And this is a big season for him as well, because it could tell a lot if the Marlins had a hit or a miss on this Jazz Chisholm trade.
Love that. Looking forward to it. I love watching him play. I love his energy. Obviously, I want to see more consistency. Awesome guy, awesome energy. Play, like, you love to root for a guy like that. So I hope he does pan out, and I hope they hit it out the park with that trade. Two last questions here before I let you go, man. Where do you think the Marlins stand, and where do you rank them in the division? When you talk about the Mets, you talk about the Nationals and the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, this is a very, very difficult division. It's probably the hardest in the MLB. Nationals are definitely the worst team. They'll finish fifth. The Phillies got better. They added Castellanos. They added Kyle Schwarber. They got a little bit of bullpen help, but I think that's what's going to hurt them at the end. The Mets did what the Mets usually do. They spent a hell of a lot of money, and they got Marte, Canna. You got Max Scherzer. You brought in Adam Ottavino. You brought in Eduardo Escobar. These are all players who had all-star potential last season on their respective teams. Then you look at the Braves. You thought they got worse by losing Freddie Freeman. They got Matt Olson, one of the best first base, probably better than Freddie Freeman at this point, a younger version of Freddie Freeman. You got Kenley Jansen. You got Colin McHugh. That bullpen's looking very nice. Atlanta's a very good team. They also brought back Eddie Rosario, who was their NLDS or NLCS, ALCS, no, NLCS MVP. So the Braves got a lot better. The Nationals are scary. I see Miami finishing fourth in the NL at the moment, NL East. I want to say third. I really do, because I do think they're at some points better than the Phillies. They usually beat up nicely on their division rivals like the Phillies and the Nationals. Those could definitely be the ones that are going to get us in the third. But I think Miami could fare pretty well. They're going to definitely stay in the mix in that NL East at least. But now with the expanded playoffs, you could finish second or third to get into that wild card round for the Marlins. So they'll definitely have a chance, and I think they'll be fighting for the third seed. But at the end of the day, they'll end up with the fourth.
All right. Well, hey, that's fair enough. Honestly, they need to prove a lot of things. Maybe they can get hot. Maybe things
surprise
can turn
me. That's
things
what
around.
I want to say. Surprise me.
Hey, yeah, exactly. Like, why not? Like, have the expectation a little bit low, and then, you know, you hope for the best from there. So yep. I'll take it. Obviously, you know, just surprise. That all I can ask for is that. Just surprise us, just like they did a couple years back. So I'm sure we're going to have a fun season, definitely more competitive season than last year. And that's all you can ask for. But my last question here for you before we wrap up is, what is the key, you think? Like, what is the key for the Marlins to have that successful competitive season this year?
That is a great question. And I think staying healthy, that's going to be the big key for them. You saw it last season. I mean, if that team was healthy throughout the first part of the season, that team would have probably been a 500 ball club. I said it many times. That division was a wide open last season. I'll say that's the biggest key factor, which is staying healthy. And then the second one is the bullpen needs to show up, and they need to make it happen. I mean, I told you about Cole Sulcer. I told you about Tanner Scott, all these guys that they brought in, Lewis Head. Those guys need to show up. But I think healthy is the biggest key. They need to stay healthy, because Starlin Marte in the first game of the season in 2021 got injured. He didn't come back till a very long time. Eliezer Hernandez got injured. Then Miggy Rowe, Jazz Chisholm, all these guys, Garrett Cooper got injured towards the end of the year. And it was just hard to climb back in it. And that was probably the biggest issue. So yeah, they need to stay healthy, man. I have no doubt. You know, I love the pitching rotation. I think they're going to be good and dominant this season. That's definitely not something I'm worried about. The offense, I'm a little bit worried about, but towards, you know, this time in spring training, Soler leading off, and you have probably Miggy Rowe second. I do like where that's going. And then the bullpen is the only concern, in my opinion, at the moment. But if that bullpen could be good, that is the big X factor, as well as keep staying healthy.
Yeah, I agree. Those are my top two things. It would be staying healthy and the bullpen. Obviously, those two come a long way. But we'll see how it goes, man. Baseball is back. It's a great time. We got that approved. We were scared for quite some time, but yeah. Marlins kick things off on Friday against the San Francisco Giants. But Kevin, man, it's been a pleasure talking Miami sports with you, man, talking Dolphins, Heat, Marlins. Thank you so much for joining. And why don't you tell the folks what you do and where they can find you at and follow you at, my man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. This was a blast. You know, we've always done this on my podcast. Now I'm finally able to come on yours and talk some all Miami sports, which I love doing. You know, I've always been a Miami fan. You know that we're loyal fans, you know. We've for sure. been through the good and the bad and the very, very bad. But yeah, I mean, I'm on Fish Stripes. You could also tune into our live streams. We're going to be live an hour and 30 minutes before the game. So 3 o'clock Eastern time until 4:35 first pitch. You can see us live on Fish Stripes. You also have our website where you can see my articles, fishstripes.com, Fishstripes Unfiltered, which is our podcast with my co-host, Isaac Azu, great guy. You should hit him up at some point in getting on the pod to talk some Marlins. And then my own personal channel, Chaos Sports Corner, I'll be uploading more. I've been pretty bad on it lately. It's been over a month. I think our video was the last one that's on there, to be honest with you. So yeah, and then my Twitter is Kevin_Barral, B-A-R-R-A-L, for the ones who do not know how to spell my last name. And my I think my Instagram is KO Sports Corner_. So that's where you could find me. Now definitely we gotta do this again towards the end of the playoffs, and you know, get this done. If it's on my podcast or yours, we'll definitely get it done.
No, most definitely, man. It's been a pleasure having you on. Folks, definitely check him out. I will have all his information in the description of this episode. He does phenomenal work. Always a pleasure talking to you, Kevin. We'll definitely link back up for this. And yeah, let's go Heat, let's go Dolphins, and let's go Marlins, my man.
Hell yeah, man. Thank you for having me.
All right, so that's a wrap. Once again, special thank you to Kevin for coming on the podcast. It was great chopping it up with him, talking some Miami sports and all. It was a great, great interview. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I mean, how good is it to just, you know, be able to talk some good Dolphins talk, some good Heat talk, and some good Marlins talk? Miami sports doesn't get better than it. I mean, a lot of ups and downs, absolutely, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. But special thanks once again to Kevin for joining the show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your continued support. And thank you for listening to the Miami Sports Vibes podcast with Nando Diaz.